This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Because this is not an April Fool's joke, this is MuggleCast episode 272 for April 2nd, 2014. This week's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/mugglecast. Welcome to MuggleCast episode 272. Eric, Micah, and I are here this week. Welcome back, guys.
It's great to be back, Andrew. You know, the thing is, I just sent an email around a couple days ago, and I said, you know, there's some news that has been worthy of talking about over the last couple of months. But honestly, more than anything else, I just wanted to hear your voice.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, let's face it, most of the talking that we do, which has been pretty infrequent over the last couple months, we've both been busy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been through text or you know, a computer.
It's not verbal. It's not through our mouths. Yes.
Exactly. And so it's great to be back doing a show with you and Eric. And it's so easy, or at least I hope it's going to be easy. You know, we just get back into the flow of things.
And I think this is easy.
I do too.
MuggleCast has never been hard, except for chapter by chapter. Other than
an occasional episode that had gone missing.
People are still giving us crap for not finishing Order of the Phoenix chapter by chapter.
Well, here's a confession. I never really enjoyed chapter by chapter because it always felt like homework to me, because we had to read certain chapters before recording.
That's true.
And it just felt like I was in school, and so it was hard. I still did it, but it was just quite the commitment.
I think we were in school too, so we had other homework.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't need more homework on top of MuggleCast is my escape, not more schooling. Anyway, well, I have my volume up plenty loud so I can appreciate every single decibel out of your guys' mouths. And
it's been 100 days since our last recording. This is I did the math. That was what I was doing briefly before we began recording. And it's been actually 98 days since we last recorded a MuggleCast. I think that's our longest hiatus.
Yeah, it might be. Yeah, I guess so.
So far. Maybe to date or something, but that is how long we can go without chatting, apparently. We find out. Well, I chat with Micah fairly more frequently, but still, this feels nice, and it's good, and at least it's a big enough time window that enough has happened to make for what I think is a pretty exciting episode.
Right. Yeah. Well, like we've said, you know, we would always come back when big news comes up, and there was certainly big news over the weekend when Warner Brothers didn't exactly announce this. It came out of a piece, a New York Times profile on Warner Brothers CEO Kevin Tsuchiyan. I don't know how to pronounce it.
You were good. No, that was good. You just need to add the hara.
That was the Tsuchiyan. Tongue version of his name.
I gave up mid last name.
Anyway,
yeah, something like that. So Warner Brothers CEO, he was profiled in a article in the New York Times this weekend. And if you looked closely, you scroll down, you do a little search on the page for Fantastic Beasts, you found a little gem, which was that Warner Brothers is planning 3 Fantastic Beasts, quote-unquote, mega movies. And it was big news because we've heard, see, I was kind of undecided on how big of news that this actually was, because on one hand, we have heard before that Warner Brothers wanted to make a franchise out of Fantastic Beasts. So I don't think anybody was like expecting this to only be one movie unless it totally bombed. On the other hand, the fact that they are planning three movies is pretty significant because they have high hopes for this new Harry Potter spinoff, if you will. So what were your guys' initial reactions to the fact that this is going to be a trilogy?
Well, I tweeted after I found out the news, and I said that at the very minimum, it'll be four movies because we all know that the last one will get split in two. But
right,
my initial reaction is, and obviously a lot of people in terms of the responses I've seen have questioned three movies. Well, no, it could be more. I think that yes, it can be more, but it all has to do with whether these movies are the success that Warner Brothers is hoping them to be. And it, chances are that you're not going to get a producer, a director, and a slew of actors to commit to more than three films at the very beginning. I don't think they're going to sign on for seven right from the start, even though I've seen speculation about it, you know, possibly going seven movies. But I'm excited about this. It starts out in New York. It's happening about 70 years before Potter. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be interesting to see how they alter the landscape to reflect that time period. And hopefully that means that a lot of stuff is going to be happening right in my neck of the woods as it relates to filming for this series.
You think so?
Oh, lucky you.
Does your area – see, here's the thing. I've thought about that as well. I don't think New York looks like it did back in the 1920s. I think it's changed quite a bit. So
it'd be closer to do it, to recreate it, if they just did like a studio or a green
screen.
Yeah,
like
studio.
If they shoot in London. I mean, I guess they could do some exterior filming in New York, but you got to find things that look like they're from the 20s, I think.
Yeah. Right. That's like, a great point.
Like, and Central Park?
Yeah, maybe.
Possibly.
But it'll be really interesting in seeing how much of the film is on location, just like it'll be interesting seeing how much of the film is practical effects or creature effects, as they say, rather than CGI. Because I think if you guys have seen, have any of you seen Noah? It's kind of just came out. I heard that all the, actually starring Emma Watson, I heard that all of the animals were CGI. There were actually like no animals at all used in the production of the film. And
you
I wonder
can't
if that's
find a good animal actor these days.
It's hard. They're all in unions. They have high
they're
rates.
They're all dead. They're all Air Bud and Free Willy. Sorry, people. They're dead. And the dog from The Artist is terminally ill.
Speaking of that, though, you know, that most of that movie was actually shot here on Long Island.
Really?
So, again, I'm not saying that Long Island was the focal point for that biblical tale, but as far as places around New York, you know, what I'm interested in, though, is what areas of New York are going to be connected to this magical world. And it'd be interesting to see what kind of ideas pop up in J.K. Rowling's mind, thinking about simple things like buildings or marquee locations around the city. Andrew, you mentioned Central Park. You know, is there a Diagon Alley of sorts in Central Park? I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting
like
to see.
District. well, I was thinking too. Like you think of J.K. Rowling's kind of humor with areas that are already, you know, big and bustling, like King's Cross Station. If she took like Grand Central Station and made it twice as big and massive, and have it had like a secret underground. Hell, that could be the market for the beasts. Could be in an underground basement. You know, we just don't know. Like, I think that's kind of the most exciting thing about these movies. And when this news broke about three movies, I kind of hearkened back to the fact that Jo would be writing it, which we found out, I guess, first that she's writing the screenplay for at least the first one. This news that there will be three kind of makes it seem like it wouldn't be too much of a stretch if she wrote all three, at least the first three, even if they make more. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you guys think? I mean, I think that jump could possibly be made, perhaps as has been the case with JKR before, she begins writing and then comes up with all sorts of extra stuff, and people think it's gold because it is.
We're going to continue in a moment with our discussion on Fantastic Beasts and where to find them. But first, I'm going to tell you where to find an audiobook. See what I did there? Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. It is the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of MuggleCast, Audible is offering you a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their great service. And today I'm going to recommend something that is pretty timely. If you follow entertainment news, you may have heard that another one of John Green's books is going to be turned into a film. That book is Paper Towns. We know that The Fault in Our Stars has been shot, and it's going to be hitting theaters this June. The next book to be adapted will be Paper Towns. And I noticed when I took a look the other day that Paper Towns has soared to the top of the Audible bestseller list, because there's a lot of interest now. Why are they adapting this one next? You will be able to find out by listening to it for free. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/mugglecast for a free audiobook. It can be Paper Towns, Fault in Our Stars, any of the books that Audible has in their store. audiblepodcast.com/mugglecast. And we thank Audible for their support of the show. I think right now my feelings are that this is going to be, J.K. Rowling has a three-part story in mind that are going to be told over these three films, and that'll be it. Because for her to be so passionate about this, and, you know, Warner Brothers, just the CEO who the New York Times did a profile on, just going over there and being like, hey, what do you think of this? And suddenly she's all into it. It just doesn't seem like this can really extend beyond three. And part of the reason I say that is because I've sort of been comparing this to The Hobbit. Now, obviously, there are clear differences. For one, The Hobbit, Warner Brothers' The Hobbit, was based on one small book and turned into three films. This is very different in that J.K. Rowling is writing all three movies, so it's not going to feel stretched or like filled with, you know, things that aren't really necessary.
Right.
So I think that there's a good chance that this is only going to be three. She has a story in mind. She said to them, look, this is going to be three movies. Can you accept that? They said yes. And what I also think, going along with this Hobbit theory as well, is that they're going to film this the same way that they did The Hobbit. And that is same director for all three movies, film all three back to back to back, release all three 1 year apart from one another. The Hobbit, currently, it's in the middle of releasing them a year apart from one another. We had An Unexpected Journey in 2012, Desolation of Smaug in 2013, and then this year, there and back again in December 2014. What do you guys think of that?
It's possible. I wonder how much of the same cast will be retained film to film, though.
That's the other thing. I think they got to include everybody, just like they did with The Hobbit.
Oh, you think so? Yeah, mm-hmm. See, that's kind of like, I wonder if it wouldn't, in fact, like go to opposite ends of the earth, like kind of like the Indiana Jones trilogy. And I'm forgetting about the fourth one, of course, but, you know, where it's kind of a different cast of supporting characters, the same main character. And I often compare Newt Scamander to Indiana Jones. I don't know if that's accurate. But, you know, where he's in different parts of the world looking for different relics, it would be like different beasts. So I can see it going the way that you just stated. I could also see it going kind of like any other regular movie where they do a sequel, you know, it's a couple years later, depending. So I could see it going either way.
It's a formula that works. When I was thinking about this, I looked at the box office totals. The first Hobbit made $1 billion worldwide.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the second made $949 million worldwide. So it almost hit $1 billion. The third one, time will tell. Maybe it'll be a bigger box office than number two, because for the same reason that the final Harry Potter and the final Twilight did so well, everybody wants to see, oh my gosh, how's it going to end? That's a
read
draw for people.
Yeah. Read the book. But you can't do that this time. And that's the joy of it.
That is definitely the joy of it. I mean, there's going to be so much interest around this because you legitimately won't know what's going to happen. And if J.K. Rowling's going to write a compelling enough story, like she did in the Harry Potter novels, then this is going to be a huge box office draw.
And just like you were saying, that kind of makes it great, the fact that she's writing these movies, because there won't be stuff that's stretched. There won't be stuff that's left out. It will be exactly as specific as the books were, because she's able to write. She's writing specifically for this format. It doesn't need to be adapted. Everything that she wants in there is going to be in there, and there won't be, a book about that that contains more.
There will be stuff that gets cut.
Well, in terms of what's absolutely necessary.
No, like, she's going to play a very big role in this.
She is making that call versus a screen artist or a screenwriter.
Steve Kloves.
Yeah, or that other guy.
Goldenberg, yeah. So one thing I did look up, though, because you kind of got me interested in what you said with Grand Central Station. Grand Central Station was created in 1871.
There you go.
So there's a very good chance that this station will play a large role in these movies. And I think that the architecture more or less has stayed the stayed the same. It's been, certainly restored, I'm sure, it's at one point or another. But that would be a place, talking about what has the look that it could have had back in the 1920s. Grand Central would definitely be one of those places in New York.
Yeah, and I understand that Apple store has actually been there since its inception as well. So that'll be a pretty cool scene.
Those things can be removed. They can be removed.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I mean, Grand Central compared to Penn Station. I mean, Penn Station is an abomination as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I think we...
Yeah, I can't imagine Newt going through there.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, no, not Penn Station. The bus terminal, ugh. Mm-hmm. I think we said this before when we first read the news, like... It's kind of not what you would think for a Beast movie to be set in a major bustling city, because you think of these beasts as being kind of in the wild and rural areas.
Central Park is going to be filled with
Nargles
and other things. Yeah. So I'm just excited for this world to come to the U.S., even if it's 70 years pre-Potter.
That's true, because we never saw anything.
We've never seen it. Yeah.
Yeah. From America.
And you know what? I may be reading a little bit too into this, but I noticed in that profile when I was reading it carefully for any other clues that it says that the story will be starting in New York. Now, like I said, I don't know if I'm reading too much into this, but could that possibly mean that this story is going to go abroad? Is it going to go back to the UK? If it's quote unquote starting in New York, or is the New York Times just saying the story starts there because it's the beginning of the story, dummy?
I think I'm reading what you're reading. I think he's going to travel. I think he travels and is discovering, these beasts in their natural habitat. So like, rather than having this movie be an adaptation of the textbook, it's kind of the story that led to this main character writing that textbook. So he's going to be going around finding each of these creatures. And I'm sure there'll be more creatures than are in the book. It's kind of going to be him abroad, is just how I see it. I mean, maybe one of those animals gets let loose in New York and that's he's the one who's tasked with catching it. It'd be kind of cool. But I think there's definitely a lot of potential for him to travel to each of these people's, or sorry, these beasts' natural habitat.
Yeah, right. I mean,
I agree.
Just a reminder as well, he went to Hogwarts. He was born in 1897, went to Hogwarts. So if this story's set in the 20s, that means he's pretty much fresh out of Hogwarts. He decided, oh, okay, I'm going to go over to New York.
Right.
But I think we agreed on a previous episode that J.K. Rowling is going to have to rewrite a little bit of the history of this character, because I'm looking at the harrypotter.wikia.com entry for him, and he joined the Ministry of Magic after Hogwarts. He spent 2 years in the office for house elf relocation. Then he joined the Beast Division and put his knowledge of magical beasts to good use. Then he was commissioned in 1918 to write Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. So maybe this first movie actually follows him writing Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them?
It's possible. I'd love it to see it like take off at his graduation of Hogwarts. Wouldn't it be funny if like they shut down the studio tour for a couple weeks just to put everything back together and show some Hogwarts sets?
I mean, for the sake of getting fans really pumped, it would be very, very cool if we went back to Hogwarts at the start of the first movie.
I mean, and then you get people like Emma said in a recent interview like last week that she'd love to cameo in Fantastic. And it doesn't look like that will ever happen. I mean, she wouldn't really reprise her role as Hermione unless it was like a time traveling Hermione, or if they did like a super flash forward at the end. I mean, there aren't many magic zoologists, people with Newt's position. But I think both Luna and her husband, whoever that may be, become zoologists in the future of the Harry Potter book. So there's very few people who do what they do. And, you know, these casts, just like The Hobbit did with Frodo and some of the casts from The Lord of the Rings, you know, showing up in the Shire in the beginning and having it be a flashback. It'd be cool to do it. It'd be great to see. I think fans would love it. But I think this film is going to stand on its own in a really big way.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. And didn't go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Please.
I'm interested off of what you said, though, with how it starts in New York. And does that mean we're only in New York for a fleeting moment before he travels somewhere else, you know, or back to the UK? So I'm hopeful that he at least spends some time here, or maybe he's here for graduate school, or he's studying you know, at some institute here in the United States, and it's brought him to New York, or some special project. I think it's going to be really exciting, and there's really no boundaries for her in writing this. I feel like, for the most part, Eric, you touched on it, whatever she writes is going to make it, you know, the sort of the major plot points are going to make it to the screen. And the fact that none of us have a book that we can really go to and read ahead and know what's going to happen, I think that's what's going to make this in some ways more exciting than Potter.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. It also, lately I've been wondering if J.K. Rowling could possibly release some version of this story in book form before the movie hits theaters. And what made me think about that is Seth MacFarlane, the creator of Family Guy, he is working on his first movie where he actually stars, his physical self actually stars in it, called A Million Ways to Die in the West. And he released a book version of it prior to the film's release later this summer. It's already out. If you go to bookstores now, you'll see it right at the front. It's called A Million Ways to Die in the West. And it's not the manuscript, but it's sort of like an adaptation of the film. And I was wondering, this made me wonder if J.K. Rowling could actually do something similar to this. Because obviously for J.K. Rowling to produce a Harry Potter spinoff book would be huge news.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have to think that publishers are clamoring for this to happen.
Oh, definitely. And there are novelizations of popular movies just in general, you know, not written by the screenwriter, but just other, that's just kind of a thing, is to have books based on the film. And I wouldn't want anybody to write it but J.K. Rowling.
As to
whether or not it would come out before the movie, I'm not sure. Maybe at the same time, maybe after. But it just doesn't, it almost doesn't make sense to not have something that she's written not be in book form. But I realize she's trying something new.
Considering her roots.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of her writing. No.
Well, but it actually goes into the other question of, like, did J.K. Rowling really write this screenplay? Because screenplay writing is completely different from writing a book, as we discussed on a previous episode.
Right.
So, and I mean, from from what we know, she wrote the screenplay. But what does that mean? Because you have to go to college to take screenplay classes and understand how that works. It's it's a completely different language, storytelling language.
From what I gather, though, there are as many different scripts or screenplays, and they're written in as many different ways as there are screenwriters, people writing them. So it's just like poetry. It's kind of like that. Like, there's a script, just from what I know, based on, like, viewing commentary, like, and behind the scenes videos on DVDs that I get, people talk about certain screenplays as being very visual. You have the dialogue, but then you have this very heavy description of what should be happening on screen at the same time. And I just imagine that Joe's screenplays will be like that, you know, where it'll be more like, they feel almost more like books, because you're telling exactly what the camera is doing, as opposed to leaving it up to director you know, yeah. interpretation. So I think her screenplays will read more like books, and that comes from just her ability for detail. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's like, I really want to lay my hands on an actual screenplay of the Harry Potter books, or sorry, screenplay of the Harry Potter films, to see specifically like how it was adapted, like how visual it is.
They're definitely out there, because when Warner Brothers submits the films for Oscars, they make those special Oscar for your consideration sites, and they put the screenplays up for public consumption. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but I think it would be a visual script, because I think that's the way that, I don't think she'd be able to do it any less detailed.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do think of screenplays just like you. I think of them as being like skeletons almost. Like you fill them in with set design and all that other stuff, but the writing is basically just, it's dialogue. It's what you show on screen. It's not any of that sort of inner thought backstory stuff unless there is voiceover.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of release date do you think we're looking at?
I still don't know. I mean, I want to think 2017. I think that's the earliest we can see it. 2016 seems too ambitious. Then again, Star Wars starts filming in May, and they're going to be released. It's going to be released 18 months later. So,
yeah,
I have no clue. There is no clue. I mean, for all we know, J.K. Rowling still writing the first. We just don't know. We haven't heard any progress updates. That's what makes it so hard.
Yeah,
I think you should get Robert Galbraith on the case.
Well, Robert Galbraith is slowing J.K. Rowling down, because as we're going to talk about in a little bit, she's writing another story. She's writing like five more books.
Yeah, that, I mean, talk about something else that she wrote that's turning into a whole series, because there's that much character development to be had. So I think there's good hope for these Wizarding or these Fantastic Beasts movies. And Micah, you asked if they'd like be in New York for a second, but I think it'll be more than that, because this was America during the Roaring Twenties. And I think that New York was probably a huge cultural center at that time. And it would be hard to I think, just whisk him away. That would stink. But I think it's going to be there in a big way.
Getting back to the idea of if there's more than three films, I have to think that Warner Brothers politely found a way to ask her if there's a possibility there can be more than three. Or it could have been part of the deal that, you know, J.K. Rowling's side of the deal was, look, I'll do this for you, but three and that's it. I don't care if you want to split it. It's three, period. And, you know, we also have to remember that after this Fantastic Beasts announcement initially came out last September, we saw that Warner Brothers trademarked Quidditch Through the Ages and Beetle the Bard. So there could also be a secret plan in the works to turn those into movies after Fantastic Beasts is finished.
I would love a Beetle the Bard. Like sort of how would they call it?
Mini series.
Like either a mini series, like one for each one, or just different segments, a segmented film, like Four Rooms or Grindhouse or all the bad adult ones I'm thinking of. But yeah, like that.
I think it'd be hard to make Quidditch Through the Ages into a movie, but hey. If anybody can do it, I'm sure Warner Brothers can.
Written by a certain author?
Yeah. Was it Kenilworthy Wisp? I think it was Kenilworthy Wisp.
I mean, yeah, if Fantastic Beasts was... Yeah, you're right. If Fantastic Beasts was penned by one author, I could see Quidditch Through the Ages also being adapted into a film. I mean, maybe this guy traveled the world learning more about Quidditch. I guess that could be interesting. I don't know.
Well, what I know is what Mr. Sugihara, getting back to this interview, said to J.K. Rowling. Like, she said it took like one phone call and like discussion over tea or a dinner, like one day. She was all of a sudden committing all this time to writing, you know, not just like a basic skeletal draft, but like the screenplay for this whole thing. And she said that the story was a bit of a story that she had tucked away in a drawer, like for her kids one day.
Yeah.
Which is just remarkable that, you know, whoever this guy is, and this is a great story by the New York Times about how Mr. Sugihara was like the unexpected genius who is like negotiating all these billion-dollar deals. I want to know what he said to JKR to get her to do this, because it's amazing. Like, there's going to be years of new Potter casting. And hey, if they're looking for Americans this time, I'm sure that Micah is going to go and try and be in one of these things.
That's Are you, right. Micah? You going to apply?
Why not?
You know, Ivana Lynch got extra. Her start through MuggleNet. Now you can too.
That's right. Yeah, I can stand idly by on the street or walk past.
Oh, you just want to be an extra. Why don't you want a speaking role?
I think Micah likes to troll.
I could get a speaking role, actually.
Do an audition right now. Hey, Newt, have you seen that beast over there?
Hey, Newt, have you seen that beast over there?
Yeah, perfect. It could use a little more of a New York accent, but...
That's true.
Can Micah do a New York accent?
I really
you know David
have
Heyman,
one.
You have an in to the casting department.
That's true.
That's true. That's true.
Too funny. Too funny.
It's got to be more like a... trying to think. I really don't have a New York accent, so it's hard
yeah,
to fake one.
I'm thankful. I don't like it. The New York accent.
Or Long Island. Mm-hmm. Hey, Newt.
Well, keep working on that. In another 100 days on episode 273, maybe you'll have a better audition for us. No offense, of course.
Oh.
Anything else to say about Fantastic Beasts?
I don't think so.
All right. There's been some other news that we're going to talk about as well. We're just going to go kind of in chronological order here, starting back in February. Does anybody else want to intro these stories, or do you want me to?
Yeah. I'll talk about this because, as we mentioned before, Andrew mentioned just a few moments ago about Robert Galbraith and the future of the Cormorant Strike series. A couple of weeks ago, J.K. Rowling spoke actually at Oxford, what it's like to write as a guy. And this was just interesting because it's the first, you know, time we really get her talking about this and how it's different, you know, how your writing is different, and how you have to start thinking like a man in the main protagonist, which Harry was, you know, a young boy. It's kind of more gender neutral, all that sort of thing. So what she says is she got inspiration from the film As Good As It Gets. She says there is a line. One moment.
There is a line in As Good As It Gets where a woman asks how he writes such wonderful female characters, and he says, and I'm paraphrasing, she says, "I think of a man and I take out the logic, or the sense. That made me laugh. As misogynistic as it is, because when I write a man, I take certain things out and give free rein to aspects of me that would not be acceptable. To be honest, I think I'm quite blokey. At least I'm told I am, and I like writing both."
She thinks of herself as being blokey. I think what she means is she's just being less ladylike in all aspects. She says, aspects of me that would not be acceptable. So I guess she can just be unfiltered and brutal is kind of how she grasps it. Having not finished that book yet, I feel all
really?
Of your eyes staring at me. I totally planned to. I couldn't quite say, except to say that it seemed convincing when I was reading it, and I think she does it well.
I mean, her writing is as strong as ever in The Cuckoo's Calling. But speaking of that, we found out in February that we knew the sequel was coming. She had said as much. The official website said so. But in mid-February, we learned more about the sequel. It is called The Silkworm. It's going to be released June 24th. And this one follows a novelist. Well, it's about a novelist who goes missing. His wife calls in Strike, of course, and at first Mrs. Quinn, that's the wife, just thinks her husband has gone off by himself for a few days, as he has done before, and she wants Strike to find him and bring him home. But as Strike investigates, it becomes clear that there is more to Quinn's disappearance than his wife realizes. The novelist has just completed a manuscript featuring poisonous pen portraits of almost everyone he knows. If the novel were to be published, it would ruin lives, meaning that there are a lot of people who might want him silenced. So that's part of the synopsis. I think that's a very interesting premise. So I enjoyed the first one, and I'm very much looking forward to the second one.
Yeah, that premise seems a lot like sort of what interests Joe. And we know that from the Potter series with the press and certain things that Harry wished, you know, didn't get out or did get out. I think it's a topic of fascination, and the way that the first book featured, and I'm told that it really focused on celebrity and how celebrities are badgered or portrayed, you know, and sort of the price of fame, as it were. So, yeah, I think it's probably, you know, in spirit, very fraternal with her other work.
It's going to be not as much a flow, I think, as we had with Potter. And what I mean by that is it's not like, you know, Harry's story kind of spanned 7 books, and you knew that you were going through his entire career at Hogwarts. Whereas with Cormoran Strike, I feel like you're just getting individual stories about the cases that he works.
Right.
You know, I'm sure that at some point, if she is indeed going to write 7 novels, which has been speculated, right?
Yeah.
Then there are pieces, I'm sure, that J.K. Rowling will do a great job weaving in, you know, from novel to novel, whether
That's
it's characters
point.
Or things that have happened in the past. But it's a different kind of writing, I think, for her, because, you know, it's just it's sort of these unique cases. And
right.
The only other thing that I saw in this article that I thought was noteworthy is that she's already writing the third. So clearly she really enjoys this character, really enjoys the series. But to touch on a point that you brought up earlier, is it interfering with her writing the screenplay for these films?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't really care. I mean, I'm fine to wait for all of this.
You don't? Are you sure? I care. I mean, but if you think about it, the more time she spends on Robert Galbraith being Robert Galbraith, then the less time she's spending on Fantastic Beasts. And this is not to fault her by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just saying this is fact. If you spend more time doing something else, you're going to have less time doing, you know, why? It's just what happens.
Maybe. Try and think of it this way, though. Like, say her creative juices are flowing and the muscle is being flexed. Like, once that starts spinning, it's easier to multitask and come up with equally brilliant material, no matter where it is. Like, once you're in the writing mood, or like, think of it like that, where because she's doing Robert Galbraith, she can also do, you know, Fantastic Beasts and whip it out kind of at a faster pace, because she's not just doing one thing.
But we also have to consider, does she want to be that busy? I mean, this sounds like these are 2 full-time jobs between writing several more Robert Galbraith books, if that report that I'll bring up in a second is true, and then 3 Fantastic Beasts movie. I mean, this sounds like a tremendous amount of work.
I think she does want to be that busy, because she was before, and I think she had a few years. She had a few years where she said, it's important that I take time off, and she did.
Right.
And no tweets happened, and no news happened.
Right.
And no tweets have almost still happened, but I think that she misses it, or not like necessarily misses it, but if I could speculate, I would say that the pressure for her, she's ready to receive it again. And I think that she's ready to operate under similar circumstances. But she is calling the shots. Like, if she needs to take more time off between this book and the next Cormoran Strike book, I'm sure she will. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, she'll never be she's fortunate to never really have to feel pressure of a deadline again, because she's making up all the rules.
Yeah. So, I mean, the first one came out last year. This new one's coming out this year. I would be shocked if the 7 books is true. I would be shocked if she releases one every year, 7 years in a row.
Right.
There's no reason to release them a year apart from one another.
I agree.
And not to mention, how about some other books that she wants to write? Surely she doesn't want to live in Robert Galbraith and Fantastic Beasts for the next 7 years, because Fantastic Beasts is going to take multiple years.
That's true. She almost made, I mean, she always made those jokes, though, before, that she goes out in public with a mustache and a shirt, or sorry, a top hat.
I'm glad she has a shirt. Yeah, but
maybe she really does want to get into that
mood. I would just add this though. I think though, and I'm not saying there's pressure at all, but one thing to keep in mind is that she did not intend for Robert Galbraith to be revealed.
Right.
So there's a chance that she could have taken much more time in writing these novels over a period of, let's say, 10 years and slowly released them to her own satisfaction. It was only once the news became public that she now realized that, well, if I really like this character and I really like the series and the direction that it's going in, I'm going to have to continue to write because people are going to want to read it.
True.
And Fantastic Beasts may have been something that she could have focused more of her time on, but now she's in a position where she has to continue to do these two things side by side. And I think with the Cormoran Strike books, maybe she just had a really great cliffhanger at the end of the last one and she had to go write the third, or maybe it's just all Eric, as you said, like that muscle is working and she just wants to keep writing and writing and writing. I think a lot of Fantastic Beasts is already written in some way, shape or form. You know, maybe it's part of her hundreds or thousands of pages of notes in those boxes, and it's just a matter of piecing all of it together. Where and it's been written in some way, whereas this new series, you know, is fresh and she has to dedicate a little bit more time to putting it together.
I want to add that when we first found out about the first book, The Cuckoo's Calling, she said on the website, when the website was released a couple weeks later, she said the second one was already completed. So going back to Micah's point about the fact that these may have been written in advance, that is, we know for a fact that she had number two done before we even knew number one was written by her.
Right. And that really makes you question how long it would have gone unnoticed.
Yeah. With that said, also, I mean, we don't know for how much longer she wanted to keep it a secret, but I didn't get the impression that it was like she wanted to wait another year. I thought it was like another few months at least she wanted to wait. I could be wrong, but because I mean, how long can you keep that secret, really?
I don't know. We'll never know, I guess, the answer. There was one other news story based on this. Oh,
by the way, real quick, where was it said that she is already working on the third one?
Where did you
see that, Micah? You said that, right?
Yeah, Micah, you said that.
Micah, own up to it now.
It's in the headline that I'm reading.
Where?
It's
this next article, third one already in progress. Okay.
Yeah.
Publishing sources say Rowling has been working on the third since last year, so it's a good chance that one is almost a wrap as well.
Wow.
I guess it's not a surprise considering if number two was done last year, then number three
could be.
Yeah, it was done this year. That makes sense.
Yeah. Well, apparently, J.K. Rowling, we talked about this just a minute ago, getting into the mindset of a guy. She's going to be making a public appearance, apparently, as Robert Galbraith. This is happening on the Harrogate stage, which is 18th of July at 7:30 p.m., the Royal Hall in Harrogate. And it will be J.K. Rowling's first and only appearance this year as Robert Galbraith.
Yeah, it's like fun to joke that, oh, she'll wear a mustache, but I think she's a little too classy for that. I think she's just going to show up being her usual self and talking Robert Galbraith. It'll be interesting. I mean, hopefully she reveals a little more about when she, like these questions we've been asking, when she planned to announce Cuckoo's Calling. I would have to think it was before the holiday season last year, because that would have been a great way to boost sales. You know, and then also, like, how many books does she intend on writing? So this will be good. Hopefully it'll be a fruitful event.
And that information comes from Robert Galbraith's website, actually. And apparently it's taking place during the Theakston, I don't quite know how that's said, Old Peculiar Crime Writing Festival in Harrogate, UK.
Yeah, so obviously a good events for her to be appearing at. I remember when this first one was revealed, there was talk of studios looking into snapping up the movie rights, but we never heard anything else about that. So I don't know if that fell through.
Those movies have already come out. They're just called something different.
Yeah, exactly.
David Heyman has him locked up.
Yeah, he might. I mean, he might.
And can I just say, I mean, we haven't done a show, but our good friend David Heyman got a hell of a lot of shout-outs during the Oscars this past March.
Yes, I was enjoying watching him in that show. Every time it went to him, or I mean, Gravity won 6 BAFTAs and 7 Oscars this year, which he produced and Alfonso Cuarón directed. So, mad props to those gentlemen.
Yeah. Where are we, Harry? I think we're past all the Robert Galbraith stuff.
There's Harry Batt.
Oh, right. Good, you talk about that. It's just a little tidbit.
Yeah, very interesting, tiny little tidbit here from mid-February. J.K. Rowling recently spoke at the Sheldonian Theater in Oxford. Actually, it was the same date and time we mentioned just before. But she said that instead of Harry Potter, her title character was initially called Harry Batt.
Two T's.
B-A-T-T. You know, in one of those strange kind of what would have been, you know, we could talk about would it have caught on, all that stuff, because he's Harry Potter and everybody knows that. But just an interesting kind of first name. I think the only other instance of that I recall is Luke Skywalker was originally called like Luke Starkiller. Or something like that in George
that
Lucas's
more badass
first draft. It is badass, but it's more Sith than Jedi.
That's true.
So Harry Batt doesn't have that much of a ring, as much of a ring to it. If Harry Potter rings, we're biased. I don't know if Potter
Batt
rings.
Just sounds like one of those boring British names.
What, Batt?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah, I'm glad she went with Potter instead.
It made all the difference for all we know.
We all remember Harry Potter Wizards Collection, the big, very expensive, complete box set. I don't think either of you guys bought it, right?
Did you? Do you have
no.
it?
No.
Yeah, I don't have it either.
I did not buy it.
Oh, you got a review copy.
If that's the one we're talking about, is it the one in the big box?
Yeah. It's got the map.
No, they've made so many freaking versions of this thing.
Yeah, no, the Wizards Collection is the big one.
The super ultimate platinum horror edition.
Now, lucky for you, they have a more affordable version. It's called Harry Potter Hogwarts Collection. This is a 31-disc set, so it comes with everything that was in Wizards Collection, but without all the gimmicks. So it doesn't come with the crazy box with the hidden compartments. It doesn't come with the map. It's just a lot. It's a scaled-down version.
What is that?
It's discs only, huh?
Oh,
I think Wizards Collection came with a map, didn't it? I'm looking at
the
little.
Yeah, I think so. I think it came
image.
With a Marauders map.
No, I said, what fun is that if it doesn't have all the.
Oh, what fun is it? Well, it's like $500 less fun. So
yeah,
that's the point behind it. There was another post about this, which I didn't bother linking to, but it has a few extra features that haven't been seen before. But what you kind of should take away from this collection, if you were me, is that there are still no bloopers or outtakes, which David Yates, years and years ago, I think it was 2011, we spoke with him and he promised, he's like, hey, this is going to be great. It's going to come out with outtakes. And there's a ton of them. We have a great blooper reel. And we've yet to see it. And it's not being advertised as part of this Hogwarts collection. So for me personally, I'm still holding off.
It looks like a nice set, but it's still $225. And that just seems like a lot of money for the 8 movies. I know you get the bonus features and you also get the 8-part documentary, which is interesting as well. But $225 for a aging movie series.
Yeah. This is only for if you never had one of these movies before. If you already own them, you know, it's useless. And from what I understand, the extended versions of the films with the deleted scenes put back in are also not part of this set.
It comes with Blu-ray 3D versions of Deathly Hallows Part 1 and 2, but only Deathly Hallows Part 1 and 2.
Yeah, it's so weird to see. I keep seeing that in stores too. Deathly Hallows Part 1 in 3D. And that was converted to 3D almost like for home video, remember? Because the effects weren't ready by the time it hit theaters.
Yeah, they scrapped it. Yeah.
Yeah, they totally scrapped it and didn't do it. So the fact that it exists in 3D now means they converted it after. And it's just interesting, like, to think about.
I think it is 3D in the set that I have as well.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's all the same discs as Wizards Collection, minus all those, like I just described, the gimmicks, the compartments, the fancy box. So, yeah, I mean, ultimately, though, if you're looking for a way to get all the movies, you can go on eBay and you can buy all of them used for, like, $30. I'm sure it's really cheap.
Oh, even Blu-rays. They have, I think it was at Walmart, and the Blu-rays, they have Blu-ray double features of every two movies. So they have one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. $5, $7, something like that. It was absolutely ridiculous. You get them 1080p, you know, high definition Blu-ray. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And that was how I had the high def versions of the Harry Potter films.
My favorite are the Ultimate Editions. Because remember, they were releasing those every few months.
Right.
I like them because they're all separate. You buy them all separate. And it kind of reminded me of like having books. Like the separate
books. But
they
stopped them, did they? Or did they finally go through with all of them?
I think they finally went through. Like, I see Deathly Hallows here. But the Deathly Hallows Ultimate Edition is movies 1 and 2.
So it's combined. It's not separate.
Yeah, on the box it says year 7. So I guess they all say year 1, year 2.
Right.
So well, I liked those. I don't have them all, but I like those.
Guys, I have to be honest with you. Looking at this next story does make me a bit hungry.
Me too. I didn't eat dinner.
Hungry for a park opening, which we don't yet have a date on. We were expecting to get a date, I think, on the reveal of when Harry Potter Diagon Alley theme park is coming. We don't have it yet. But there was a whole convention in January. It was mid to late January, like the 20th, where they had the press come in, and they actually had a bunch of locals. You could get tickets for it, and I forget exactly what the junction was called, but they did reveal
Celebration
some
of Harry Potter.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. How generic. I should have known.
Well, you may remember going way back, the initial name for the first one. This is the second one, but the first one was called Harry Potter Home Entertainment Celebration.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, they did get to preview, for some of the breasts, they get to preview the food that would be happening at the Leaky Cauldron. And to be honest, I think everybody went into the Leaky Cauldron and just can't say anything about it for another couple months. But the food that's happening there, just to kind of interest people who've been to the Wizarding World, you know, you can get fish and chips, and there's this focus on British cuisine existing already in the Three Broomsticks. With Diagon Alley, with the Leaky Cauldron, there's going to be a few more options from what it sounds like, steak and ale pie, chicken and mushroom pie, a number of additional pastries and creams for dessert. And I think the big thing that you should take away from this news story is going to be, of course, Florian Fortescue's ice cream parlor, which will exist in the Diagon Alley section. That's where Harry goes in book 3 to do his homework. And Florian helps him out, I think, with astronomy and gives him free ice cream. So that's totally going to be there. And it's going to be an ice cream park, and there's going to parlor, and there's going to be lots of ice cream flavors specific to that area of the theme park. So just some really cool things to look forward to. As I'm speaking now, my mouth is watering. I should just stop looking at these photos.
The rumor, I think they're aiming for June for release, but there's also been speculation, it's running a little delayed, so maybe it'll be later in June or July. I mean, it's a big project, especially compared to the Hogsmeade, because this time there's a train involved. You got the mini expansion happening at Hogsmeade for the train. And then, of course, everything that's going on at Diagon Alley. So it's a pretty big undertaking.
Do we know when Hollywood is opening?
Next year.
Next year?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's
like
still
in summer?
I guess so. It's still, they just started going vertical on their construction here. So Yeah, I would assume they're aiming for summer. That, I guess that would make the most sense, considering Hogsmeade and now Diagon Alley both opened this year. But I'm not even that really excited for this Hollywood one, other than the fact that it's close to me, because Hollywood looks to just be Hogsmeade. I mean, they haven't released any concept art or anything, but I think it's just going to be Hogsmeade. I mean, they're really tight on space in Hollywood, so.
Yeah, well, didn't they demolish an entire theater?
Yeah. But like, there was zero room before that. So,
now there's a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it should be fine.
Yeah, but this is exciting. Obviously, these plans have already happened, and we're just finding out about them little bits by bit at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's some heavy British fare, to be honest with you, to be serving in a very warm climate. But
yeah,
well, I mean, they did that with the first one. I mean, they did what, fish and chips, and I don't know what, I can't remember what else.
Bangers and mash. I'm trying to think what else. But yeah, that kind of.
We're Americans. We like to eat a lot of food.
That's true.
Yeah, it's true.
It's very true. So at least I'm looking forward to it.
At least with the Harry Potter parks, there were like dietary restrictions. Like, there's no soda being served in.
But you can have butterbeer, which has about 5,000 packs of sugar in it.
It's true.
There are some exceptions to the rule, Micah. I don't make the rules.
So I think to wrap up the news discussion, we can briefly touch on our favorite subject, and that is Pottermore. And there's some new information that has been released courtesy of J.K. Rowling, who asked that all of her wonderful followers, I should say, and maybe some that are not her followers, retweet the hashtag Wizards for Scotland Rugby Team. And as a thank you for doing that, she gave all of the fans a deep insight into the history of the Quidditch World Cup.
Yep. I didn't retweet it, but I did.
I did not either.
Read it.
I do not follow her.
It was pretty interesting, actually. She had a good amount to share. This was part one. She also did a second part where she revealed that Crum is out of retirement for the 2014 Quidditch World Cup. I thought it was interesting that she was talking about present day tournaments, given that I don't think we ever heard about anything really going on in present day.
Yeah, that's true. That's pretty true.
Part one focused on the rules and regulations of the tournament, how it's governed by the International Confederation of Wizards Quidditch Committee, and talked a lot about the structure of the tournament, the history of the game, and some of the more unusual and controversial entries into the rule book. And you know, we're not going to go into detail here, I don't think, but
no,
we want to leave it up to listeners to go and experience it and read it for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was the hashtag for? Yeah, was it for a specific cause?
Hashtag Micah, follow me, please.
No. If that gets 1,000 retweets, I will follow her.
Oh wow! Wow. Okay. Does she have to be the first one to tweet it?
The tweet was Wizards for Scotland Rugby Team. I don't totally understand. It had something to do with rugby happening over in the UK.
Right.
Yeah.
But I couldn't say what, but it was definitely something like that.
I think it's probably just the general support of Wizards being us for the rugby team over there in Scotland.
It was a clever thing in that J.K. Rowling got directly involved with Pottermore and rallied her followers and obviously was tweeting more, which is a good thing. So
yeah, I agree.
There actually is one more news story, and that is that the Bloomsbury has decided to republish the UK children's edition Harry Potter books. Yeah, start saving up for this new set.
I do have the children's editions from the UK, though.
Yeah, those were the best. Yeah, they were the best.
They're still wrapped in plastic. I haven't opened them. So.
Oh, wow. Well, you're not missing much on the inside of the book. Let me tell you that. The UK editions don't have chapter images. We were really spoiled with Mary Grand Prix. Mm-hmm. And really beyond the chapter images, which, you know, our listeners may be like, he's crazy, who cares? They actually don't change the font for Hogwarts letters and different letters that Harry gets in the mail from Sirius. There's that one in book three from Hagrid where the teardrops are on it because Beaky has just been sentenced to death. And all of that stuff that was like, you know, Hagrid's scrawling handwriting or Mafalda Hopkirk's beautiful script, none of that is in the UK editions. It's all just one font. I think it's Garamond, which is, it just takes you out of the experience. The way that the US versions took you into the experience, I can't read through the UK books because they don't hold my hand in that way. Mm-hmm. But
they don't hold your hand.
Maybe they will this time, though, because this new reprint, this new version of the series, is going to be redesigned inside and out.
Exactly.
That was something that they said in the press release. So maybe it'll include chapter art, and maybe it'll be Mary Grand Prix. I mean, I don't think there's any reason not to just use hers unless they really want this new illustrator, Johnny Duddle, to do them. I guess that's possible.
Yeah,
Duddle the like additions. Bat.
Duddle like a what?
Like bat.
I didn't. Oh yeah.
So, but I mean, if they do use Mary Grand Prix, she might be able to make a nice little penny off of that.
No, I don't think she makes. I really don't think she makes any money off her art.
That's sarcasm.
I'm actually being honest. I heard that once.
Bet she will. She probably didn't. She probably does. It's. She probably doesn't get a nickel every time a Harry Potter book is sold in the US, but like they would pay her, I think, to use them in the UK because it's a completely different deal.
Right. I have a feeling that they'll do it all different. There's a quote from Johnny Duddle who says, "I'm hugely excited to work my way through the wonderful books. Couldn't have asked for a more enjoyable subject matter. It's exciting, daunting, and I feel the weight of responsibility. I'm just hoping that my illustrations faithfully reflect the characters and world created by J.K. Rowling." So it sounds like he's talking maybe a little bit more than about covers only.
True.
I had a guess from that quote.
True.
And he's known for doing picture books, which have a lot more pictures than just the front and back cover. The picture books that he's known for include The Pirate Cruncher and The Pirates Next Door.
Yes. Which we all have and have read. And
yes, we love those. It's the same, yes.
Just like we've seen all the content from the new... See, here's the other thing. Okay, so we have this Bloomsbury... So Bloomsbury is really re-releasing them with the new covers. And then also, beginning in 2015, they're re-releasing them, the complete illustrated versions. And those are the ones that may... We don't know for sure, but they call them complete illustrated versions, meaning there's going to be a hell of a lot of pictures inside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it seems strange for them to do this a year before the illustrated books come out.
Just trying to make money.
It has to be about the success that Scholastic just had with Kazuo Kibuishi's work, about rebranding the series, about not having them just look the same as they did 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Although they tried it once before with the 10th anniversary, and that went nowhere because they never followed it up. You know, I think this whole just blanket redesign is something that in the Potter books, at least in the UK, they had the adults and the children, so there was variety that you'd see in the bookshop. But I think, you know, they're in the same situation where they think that making it look a little different is going to increase sales, or as the sales speak is, of course, to introduce these books to a new generation.
Well, that's it, and I think we've touched on that a number of times on past episodes, that a lot of the reason behind doing what they're doing, while financial, is also to reintroduce, or I should say introduce, the series to a younger generation, and based on the times and however the art is created might have more an appeal to a different generation. But, you know, one thing, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but you know, one thing that I have never seen happen to any book in the Potter series is I've never seen it jacketed based on the movies. And I think that that's something that Scholastic and Bloomsbury have done a great job of in not letting it get to that point.
We should celebrate that right now, because if you think about, I mean, I'm sure there's a copy of Divergent sitting on store shelves now with Shailene Woodley's face on it. You know, and Twilight did the same thing, and hell,
Hunger Games, Fault in Our Stars. Everybody's doing it. For some reason, J.K. Rowling could get away with it.
Not doing it. You're right. So. I'm very, very happy about that.
Yep. As am I. So I wanted to, you know, before we kind of wrap things up here, we did get some tweets in response to asking listeners what they thought about Fantastic Beasts.
And go for it.
Let's go through and read some of them here. Kristen Burford says, "The boys are back in town." Yes, we are. Fantastic Beasts is more original, so should fare better than The Hobbit.
Reviews-wise, yeah, I hope so long as the story's good. I mean, but box office-wise, $1 billion is going to be hard to beat. But we'll see. Who knows?
Yep. Tom Dell says, "It's fantastic," in quotes. Very funny. Although we knew back in 2013 it was going to be, quote, more than one movie.
Right.
So it's not much of a surprise. Okay.
Right. I said that, guys. Remember?
Samantha, yeah. At Gordon Samantha _ says, "I'm mostly excited about anticipating the next film without knowing what's next in the story. It'll add new excitement for fans."
We said that as well. Good point.
We had something from, it was a tweet from this person, The Art of Spying, who said, "It's fan bait, but as fans, we couldn't be more thrilled." What does that mean? It's fan bait.
That people can't help but, they won't be able to resist going in to see it because, oh my gosh, it's a Harry Potter spinoff from J.K. Rowling.
Oh, but if you're talking about something that's like legitimate, it's definitely something written by J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, no, I think she's just saying it's incredibly tempting to want to see it, even though you're not sure of it.
Okay. Yeah, I get that. I get that now. Thank you for clarifying.
Because, I mean, like, we're all really excited about a project we have no clue. We don't know anything about. We don't know anything about it. We know the character's name. So what? And it involves Beast.
The main character's name, yeah.
Yeah.
It's true.
Shelby Marie at Shire Badger says, "If JKR is okay with it, then so am I. I'm ecstatic to learn even more about the Wizarding World."
And, you know, I had that view as well until she decided to do this pre-Hogwarts Harry Potter play. So count me a little more skeptical than I was previously.
I would agree with how you feel about the play.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm really excited for Fantastic Beasts, but it's hard to argue that Harry Potter's pre-Hogwarts years are going to be really exciting, but listen to our December 24th episode for more on that.
Yeah. Mario Padilla sent two tweets because he couldn't fit it all in one. He says,
"Is it Mario? Mario?
Mario.
Mario.
Mario. Mario is, of course, the Nintendo character."
Oh, I always say Mario.
But this could be Mario. I don't know. Known of Mario for a while. This Mario.
Tweet at us. Let us know. I don't see why some people are mad/upset about this. There really isn't source material. This is all coming from Jo's imagination. She can make as many films as she wants, and I will go see them.
Right. And that's why the Warner Brothers CEO flew over there. He knew it was worth a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain plot tricks and plot things that you can do when you're making a trilogy, if you know from the outset that you're making a trilogy. So I think the films will have some resonance between each other and references to each other and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It'll be fun to have this new trilogy.
Real quick, I just hope the level of detail is back. I know that's different when you're in a movie, but if she's able to pull it off in the same way that she did with the books, just think about all the speculation that will be going on.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
Zemmer Galpaz says, "Hope this isn't an April Fool's joke," as we record here on April 1st. No, it is not. Actually, this is all a figment of your imagination.
Yes, I haven't been recording this whole time.
Yes. Trinica says, "Even if it's just a cash cow, I will never say no to more Potter material." Sarah Tavares, "I hope Cuaron will be the director."
What do you
feel?
Could
be possible.
Andrew, did you like Gravity? You saw it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was good too. And I'm wondering, because of how I feel about the third Harry Potter book, would I give him a second chance? Not that it's my decision to make, but would I be like excited about an Alfonso Cuarón Harry Potter movie? And I think I would. I think I've reached that age where I can appreciate
his past Prisoner of Azkaban.
I'll never quite forgive, but I think that what he did with Gravity was good, and I think that he would probably or possibly work well with some of those visuals of the time period.
Oh, yeah. I think Fantastic Beasts would be great for him based on what I saw in Prisoner of Azkaban. I mean, I'm one of those people who liked Prisoner of Azkaban. I know there's a big debate, but...
No, that's fine. Yeah.
Yep.
It's just, considering he kind of rebooted the visuals of Harry Potter, I think he has a strong sense of the wizarding world and what you can do with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would definitely be a top, I think, pick for... to direct this, and
because I mean, really think about it. Who do we trust with this project?
You think Creatures and you think Guillermo del Toro, but those are all creatures with knives for fingers and
I don't
15
trust
eyes. So I don't know. Like, I mean, the profound visual directors in Hollywood,
right? Like, would people be excited if it's a director who just really doesn't have a good resume? I mean, it has to be somebody with a really good resume, I think.
I would agree.
Yeah.
And let's also remember that Alfonso seemed interested in the idea of Fantastic Beasts when Vulture approached him at a party a few months ago and asked him. And he said, nobody's approached me yet, but yes, that sounds like an interesting idea.
And given their relationship with David Heyman coming off of Gravity.
Right. It's can't miss.
It's can't miss, yes. And it would now be directed by Academy Award-winning director Alfonso Cuarón. So
which I guess
go.
Would be the first time we could say a Harry Potter movie was directed by an Academy Award winner, unless Chris Columbus won something before.
He's an author now, actually, and the sequel to his book, it was called House of Secrets,
House of Cards.
The sequel is out now as well. You know, we got a funny tweet here. It's kind of sarcastic. We look for this occasionally. The tweeter is called Look at the Flowers. At Unky D on Twitter.
That's a reference to The Walking Dead a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
Thank you for pointing that out.
No problem.
Unky D says, anything that distracts J.K. Rowling from writing adult fiction can only be a good thing.
Yeah.
See, that's...
I don't agree with that.
Well, obviously this person does not like Casual Vacancy or Cuckoo's Calling. So
I didn't like the Casual Vacancy either. It was rough, but I did like Cuckoo's Calling. It was rough.
Yeah. No, you're right.
It was rough to read.
I couldn't finish it. I'm still looking at it sitting there taunting me.
It is.
In fairness, I'm looking on Amazon right now. I mean, you know, 4 stars. That's not bad.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
From who, though?
I mean, an overall rating, 4 stars. Mm-hmm.
Right. So your copy of Cuckoo's Calling.
It's actually worse. It's 3 stars.
There you go.
Casual Vacancy?
Yeah.
Out of
based on 4,600 reviews.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Well, but it wasn't Potter. But we do have one final tweet here from Helen Kelly, who touches on our director discussion just a bit ago. So exciting. Interesting if it will have the same director or different ones. Would like a variety. So Helen would like to see more than one director throughout the course of the films.
I don't think so.
Depends how they shoot it. Like you were saying before, they do it kind of all at once. Chances are it's going to have the same. I think it should have the same director. I think it needs consistency.
Exactly.
The Potter films did not have that really. And I think that, you know, we were just joking around about the Oscars, but I think that potentially hurt Potter in the Oscars a little bit, not having the same director throughout.
That's I don't know about point. That because the last 4 films did.
Yeah, but there was also the stigma of, Harry Potter's a children's series.
Yeah. Well, and it wasn't really American. I mean, you can say, like, what makes a film American? Because it was funded by Brothers, but maybe if it's set in New York, the people will react more kindly to it.
Well, especially if it films in New York, too.
Yeah, then it feels more local.
There was something else I was going to say about this. What were you just saying, Micah?
It was about directors.
Oh, yeah. If you look at True Detective, a series that was on HBO earlier this year.
It. People are like, it's amazing.
Yeah, everybody loves it. Everybody says, oh, it's the best thing, you know, maybe better than Breaking Bad. Oh, my God. The entire 8 episodes was directed by one director and also had one screenwriter. This is like a big trend. I mean, people can really appreciate this consistency across multiple stories. And I think Fantastic Beasts would really benefit from that. I think it, I don't think you can switch from director to director to director for this, because if you did, you'd be running the risk of them losing the vision when Warner Brothers is, this is already a risky bet for them. I think you got to play it safe where you can. And
yeah,
one way to do that will be same director, just like David Heyman's going to produce them all, and it's probably going to have the same cast all the way through.
Yeah, I think you have to have also, in my mind, it has to be somebody who is familiar with the Potter series. You can't bring in a director that hasn't worked on the films before. I don't think it'll work.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
There's a certain, and I get this isn't Potter, but it is, and it's the same world. And I think, you know, having Heyman there is a huge bonus. Be interesting to see who else kind of gets worked into the fold, you know, across the board, that names that we're familiar with in different areas of the production. And I think director wise, you know, Cuaron's a interesting choice. I think, given the material, he'd be a great pick. And I hated Prisoner of Azkaban, so it shows you even I'm willing to come around on this.
Yeah.
I think it's also a safe bet that Stuart Craig is going to be involved in this as well. The production designer. I mean, he's been actively involved in the Harry Potter parks, so his mind has been in it all this time. And I'm just looking at his IMDb right now. He had a film in 2012 called Gambit, and then he's in pre-production on Tarzan, and guess who's directing that? David Yates. Harry Potter 5-8 director. So, you know, there's all these little connections still lingering even past Harry Potter.
Yeah, I could see sort of the family reunion taking place here on some level. I mean, and I think you want that because, and I would think, and I'm not obviously saying that I know this for certain, but I would think that J.K. Rowling would want that because you've already entrusted Potter to these people and they did a great job with it. So why wouldn't you want the same group of people to make Fantastic Beasts?
Then again, a different director and a different feel might be a benefit. If you look at, I only just found this out. This isn't knowledge I normally store in my head. But the first three Star Wars episodes, 4, 5, and 6, all had different directors. A New Hope was George Lucas. Empire Strikes Back was Irvin Kershner. And then The Return of the Jedi was directed by Richard Markand. So you think of Star Wars, like, that is a cohesive, coherent visual look. You know, they go to Tatooine in two of those three movies, and it's all, they have Death Stars in the other two. But the movies are different enough because they're different parts of the same story. So I can also see them maybe doing different directors and having that be a benefit. I don't know.
I don't know that this, well, I was going to say, I don't know that it's on the same scale, but it could be from a, you know, from a revenue standpoint.
Right. Well, I'm also just comparing HP to Star Wars a lot lately because they both have 3 films that are in the pipeline. You know, so it's kind of like a great way to say, hey, these are very similar in very similar situations.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Okay. So that's it for the news. Thank you, Micah.
No problem. Usually I don't know what happened there. It used to take, what, like 90 seconds? This took like 90 minutes.
To do the news?
Yeah.
Well, we were way
back in the day when it was pre-recorded.
I miss your little jokes. I miss your little
your pre-recorded news. Well, yeah. The big mistake we made with the pre-recorded news was that you were reading the news and then you would move on to a variety of different subjects and then we would repeat them.
Right. So it was, or sometimes I don't know if you'd even discuss it. You just move into your
what we wanted
book,
to talk
book
about
discussion, theory discussion for that particular episode.
Mm.
News was an afterthought,
and now it's our
priority.
It's
the only thought.
That was That was 8.5 years ago, guys. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. But once Fantastic Beasts start up again, God knows what we'll be doing then. But I have to imagine there's going to be some speculating going on if J.K. Rowling, like I said earlier, does as good of a job as she did with Harry Potter.
Of which I think there is no doubt. Andrew, are you going to LeakyCon in July?
No.
Oh.
Not to ruin that, but.
Oh, really? No.
I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. But you'll catch the park sometime.
Oh,
sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Of course.
Okay.
Wouldn't miss it for the world, for the wizarding world.
Yep. We did want to mention, of course, that LeakyCon is happening this summer. I know that Mike and I will be there mainly for our podcast Game of Owns, which we did want to plug. LeakyCon this year is taking place at the Orange County Convention Center from July 30th to August 3rd. Not sure what state registration is in terms of how full it is or if it's available. I know hotels are hard to come by at the moment. So head over to LeakyCon.com, but not today. Because right now it's actually a plumbing convention website for April Fools.
Oh, that one I was invited to.
The plumbing convention.
Yeah.
That one's in June. Maybe Mario will be there. But there's LeakyCon. So again, that's in July. And then there's also one at the beginning of July called Shoot 212. And I've been just kind of writing about that on MuggleNet. It's taking place over the 4th of July weekend, so actually the 2nd to the 6th in July, and that is located at the Santa Clara Convention Center in Santa Clara, California. A little closer to you, Andrew. And the cool thing about Shoot 212 is that they're developing an entire wizard village that they're building inside the convention center for guests.
Wow.
A village?
Yeah, it's going to be a village. It's going to be a town. Like, they're going to have...
Oh.
Like, the programming rooms are going to be designed to be like Grimald Place. The different areas, like the kitchen, the attic, you know, stuff like that. And then there's actually just going to be a town where, so like the vendor room is going to be like a marketplace, like as part of a town. And there's going to have like a courtyard for Quidditch and stuff like that. So it's pretty exciting stuff. The website is shoot212.org. Go check it out. I just bring it up because it seems like it's going to be pretty cool. And I'm going to try and get there this July. And then LeakyCon, of course, LeakyCon.com is the website for that.
Yeah. And I think we can get into plugging other podcasts here really quickly. Eric mentioned Game of Owns. It is our Game of Thrones podcast that Eric and I do a couple times a week with Zach, Louie, and Selena. Who you've heard from time to time on this show as well. And we will be at LeakyCon, as mentioned. But the biggest news to discuss here is, of course, that the fourth season of Game of Thrones starts this Sunday, April the 6th on HBO. And that means we will be getting into our high season. I don't know what else to call it.
We struggle with off-season, on-season. So I think high season is
in-season. In-season.
Yeah. Off and on and in.
I like high season. That makes sense given Game of like high seas. I know Game of Thrones doesn't deal with ships much, but or maybe it does. Does it?
Do.
I need to start watching.
But no, yes.
You do. Yes, absolutely.
Season premiere coming this Sunday, and we'll have an episode released the Monday following every one of the 10 episodes of this season, as well as some other stuff throughout the course of each of the weeks. So definitely be sure to check it out. You can go to gameofowns.com or our partner site, winnerscoming.net, for all of the latest information. And if you like what we have to say here and you want to hear a more adult version, you can check out Game of Owns.
Okay.
How's that?
That was great. Very timely. That's why you guys wanted to do this podcast.
That's it.
I see now. And of course,
I wanted to talk to you, Andrew.
Oh, sure. And I want to plug three projects involving the word hype. First, of course, there's Hypeable. Then there's Hype, the podcast that we do every other week on Hypeable, general entertainment podcast. It's sort of a reflection of what you see on Hypeable. And then Hype After Dark, which is on Hype Podcast as well. And me and one of my best friends do that. It's a general talk show. We talk real news, entertainment news, real life, all those kinds of things. So go to hypepodcast.com for that. That one is a subscription one, $3.99 a month, 4 episodes a month. So thank you, everybody, for listening. It's been a fun show, boys.
We'll mention one more thing here. There is a new MuggleNet.com. You may notice that the MuggleCast website may be functional, maybe not by the time you're listening to this episode. It is going back up. We recently revamped MuggleNet.com. It's turning 15 this year, so it's, you know, changes are happening. It's becoming a man. But we came up with a new, entirely new interface over on MuggleNet. So I do want to encourage people to visit MuggleNet.com for Harry Potter news. Just spend some time on it. Give it a chance again, because I think it's this latest revamp is very exciting. And we only do these sorts of things, I don't know, every 8 years or so. So it's really exciting. And that was that just happened. It's brand new. So go take a look.
Just happened. Brand new.
And it's not an April Fool's joke.
Right. Right.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Eric Skull.
And I'm Mike Tannenbaum.
And we'll see everybody next time in 200 days for or next week, depending on what tidbit J.K. Rowling drops about Fantastic Beasts next, for episode 273, where Micah will also provide his audition for the Fantastic Beasts film.
Yes, work on a New York accent.
Goodbye.
New York. Goodbye, everybody.